Welcome to the Al Malmberg Show, and our phone number, you're welcome to jump in. Our phone number is 651-989-9226 and toll-free 866-989-9226. Great book that came out in May, written by a couple of local guys, David Bruns and John or J.R. Olson. The book is Weapons of Mass Deception. And I saw the book and I saw the idea of the book. I thought back to the Iraq War, the Gulf War, and we knew that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction because how many tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of Kurds did he kill in northern Iraq in testing out his chemical weapons? So we know that he had weapons of mass destruction. So what became of these weapons of mass destruction? And that's what this book deals with. And it's a novel and written by Bruns and Olson. And I love the whole idea behind this, guys. How did you come up with the idea?
So actually, JR and I, this is David speaking. JR and I knew each other for a couple of years. And about a year ago, April, we were asked to speak at a Naval Academy parents function. And the topic was what kind of career can your child expect in the Navy and after the Navy. I went first. Mm-hmm. I was in submarines for 6 years, got out and did 20 years in corporate America, and then left and started writing science fiction novels. JR went after me, and he was in for 21 years in naval intelligence. He started going through a very detailed description of his resume and things that I hadn't even known. And when we finished, one of the parents raised her hand and said, "You know, you guys should get together and write a book." So I had been wanting to branch out of science fiction, so I invited JR to lunch next week, and I pitched the idea to him. He says, "I think it's great. I've got this great idea." So he actually had the idea right at the beginning. So we're sort of off and running after that.
The parents, what do they call them? I'm trying to remember now. Where you spoke, it is the parents.
Yeah, Naval Academy Parents Association.
Yeah, and they have sons or daughters that are right at the academy.
Correct.
They are currently there, and it's a great organization, by the way. It really is, and I love the story. All right, John, the idea of what happened to these weapons, and I'll tell you, I've asked this question many, many times, and have had heated debates on the show with callers who say, "There were no weapons of mass destruction," to which my response is, "Of course there were. They used them. We know they had them. Where did they go?"
Well, that's a great question. As everybody knows who followed events in 2003, 2004, we spent mm-hmm. an awful lot of man hours and effort trying to find those weapons. There were reports out, I don't know, 6-8 months ago, that they had in fact found caches of old chemical munitions, but
exactly.
But
yes.
Our book actually specifically focuses on the possibility that Saddam Hussein had in fact developed some crude nuclear weapons, and the premise was that, much like in the first Gulf War back in 1991, roughly 130 aircraft that were still left in the Iraqi Air Force after we started carrying out the air campaign, they flew to Iran. And the idea was safekeeping.
Yeah.
And
they flew to Iran, right?
They did, yeah. They flew to Iran. And the Iranians kept them as war reparations for the Iran-Iraq War. And so the idea there then was, well, if he had these crude nuclear weapons, maybe there was somebody inside of Iran that he thought he could trust with them. And then the book takes off from there. So,
yeah, I remember seeing a great photograph. And it was, I believe it was 2, maybe 3 MiGs that had been buried out in the Iraqi desert. And I thought to myself, if they could bury MiGs out in a desert, what else could be buried out in the desert? Have you ever asked yourself that question? And I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
So the desert is a big place.
Yeah. You know, let me ask you this. At night, our satellites that we have to observe countries like Iraq, do they have night vision capability? Could they see if somebody was taking these weapons of mass destruction out into the desert and burying them, or scooting them away to another country?
Well, our reconnaissance capabilities, as I'm sure you're well aware, are pretty incredible. I would hesitate to give away specifics. I am retired, well, but I still, you know, I'm still under the binding agreement.
Right. Well, you can't talk, but I can.
Absolutely.
I was at NORAD in the mid 80s.
Okay.
And saw a photograph from the satellite of a basketball in somebody's driveway, and you could read Voight.
Okay.
You could read the manufacturer's name on the basketball. So that, if that's any indication.
That would be an extremely high resolution, probably black and white.
Image
is what you saw then? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, or was that a fake photograph?
Probably not.
I mean, I figured it was the two generals from the United States and Canada that showed us the photograph. So I thought, well, you know, I don't think the generals would be showing us fake photographs, would they?
Nope.
Oh, so it's private. That's the other story.
There were many times when JR and I were doing some plotting exercise that we would run into a sticky section of the plot and we'd be stuck. And we worked at the Savage Library, which is a suburb here of Minneapolis, and we every week we'd come in and we'd draw out the timeline on the whiteboard and we'd get stuck. Mm-hmm. And JR would kind of rub his chin and then he'd look and he'd say, "What if this happened?" And I never knew whether something like that had actually ever happened or whether he was just extrapolating, but he was a great person to have when you're writing a plot for a thriller.
Well, it's a good thing you never asked him, David, because if he had told you, then he'd have to kill you.
I never asked. Don't ask, don't tell.
We did, and I'll tell you what, Al, one of the things that we tried to focus on very much in this novel is being as technically accurate as we could possibly be, without going over the edge and giving away any of the, you know, the real classified details. Because you know, we're both veterans, and when we, you know, see a TV show or a movie or read something in a book that is just ridiculous, we both get pretty frustrated, and it loses our attention immediately.
Yeah.
So one of the
things
we pledged when we started the process was, let's be as technically accurate as we can be.
For example, in the movie Pearl Harbor, you have all these ships that are still floating, but yet the Japanese Zeros are strafing the sailors in the water.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that's exactly what they would do.
Yeah.
They'd avoid the ships and go after the sailors in the water. We're out of action anyway.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. It's 11:16. We're going to get into the plot of the book and the storyline and how it goes without telling the end. We would hate to do that. David Bruns, J.R. Olson, John Olson, our guests. Weapons of Mass Deception is the book. By the way, where is the where can we get the book?
You can find it on Amazon in print or in ebook form, or you can also find it on Barnes & Noble in ebook form for any Nook readers out there.
Fabulous. All right, we'll take a break. And if you'd like to jump in, this is a great conversation. 651-989-9226 and toll-free 866-989-9226. Coming up on 11:17 on CCO. The book is Weapons of Mass Deception. David Bruns, J.R. Olson, John Olson, the guys wrote it. They're both spent a number of years in the Navy. And the whole idea behind the book is just intriguing to me. Who are the main characters in this book that we're going to be reading about?
So the good guys in the book are there three people who meet at the Naval Academy, Brendan McHugh and his classmate Liz Sarouche, both graduate in 2003. So they're actually one of the classes that started at the Naval Academy before 9/11 happened and then graduated after 9/11 mm-hmm. happened. Brendan goes on and becomes a SEAL. Liz goes into the Marines and eventually becomes an FBI agent. She's also of Iranian descent and speaks Farsi, so it's a nice linguistic bit. Plebe was a gentleman named Don Riley, who ended up washing out for medical reasons and ended up at the CIA. So we have a CIA agent, we have an FBI agent, and we have a Navy SEAL. So those are our three protagonists. I'll let JR talk about the bad guys.
I was wondering what happens to individuals that wash out. They go into the CIA. Okay.
I didn't exactly say that, but hey, you can draw your own conclusions, Al.
So on our antagonist side, the bad guys, so to speak, it's a rather interesting connection that our three main antagonists have. I hesitate to give too much away.
I'll give it away.
Yeah, get us intrigued so we go buy the book.
Yeah. Well, so it's they're related. Let's just say that, and loosely related, and it's a dysfunctional relationship across the board amongst all three of them. Let's put it that way.
So I think we can say that the elder brother is an Iranian mullah. His the middle brother is a Quds special forces agent and also part of the intelligence arm of the Iranian army, and the third is a member of Hezbollah who is given special assignment, let's say.
Let me ask you a question, John, to you directly. When you finished the book, did you have to send it to CIA headquarters at Langley to get approval for this book?
No,
published?
I was never assigned to CIA, so I don't have that responsibility at all.
Okay, so there's been no problems with our government in reading this book?
Nobody has come knocking on our doors threatening to arrest us. It's a book of fiction, right?
Right.
What we did really well, I think, was to tie in real-world historical events to every step of the book. We tried to tie our characters to real things that happened over the course of the period of time that the book takes place. And we were pretty diligent about making sure we had the dates and events very accurate in the story.
And there was never a shortage of events that would spark your interest to tie in with the book, because it's on a daily basis for anybody that follows it.
Yeah. So, for example, we were in final edits and actually in galleys on it. And the whole kerfuffle happened where the 47 senators sent a letter to Iran. And had we made that up and put it in the book, I mean, but it happened. So we went back and put it in because it's just too good to pass up.
Yeah. I said who would have believed it, but it did happen one other time in our nation's history. So maybe we would believe it.
Yeah.
But then again, how many people would be aware of that? Probably not a lot.
True.
Yeah. True.
Yeah. So you tied the novel in as a novel.
Mm-hmm.
You tied it in with current events, which makes it seem very, very real when you read this book, this novel. And it's well written. Now, did both of you write? Or David, did you do the writing and you were the idea guy, John, or how did this work? Or did you both write?
So we actually, when we sat down, we didn't really know how to do a co-writing project. So we sort of worked it out over time. But basically, we plotted the novel together.
Mm-hmm.
JR would write the outlines and do all the research. So if I need to know what a break bulk freighter looked like, I'd get a picture of a break bulk freighter and specs and this is the name of the ship. So I didn't have to sit back and think. So when I'm writing along and, the CIA agent pulls out a weapon, I write insert weapon here so the JR can fix it. So I did most of the writing, the drafting stuff. We did the plotting together, and we did the editing together, and then, of course, we're doing the marketing together.
Now, I'm just out of curiosity. You brought up the weapon. What is the government issue these days? Are they what kind of weapons? They're no longer the Colt .45 ACP, I presume. They've gone to 9mm, or what's the standard issue?
I will leave that to my details guy.
Yeah, honestly, I think it varies by service or intelligence agency for those people who are out operating in the field and whatnot. I mean, it's different across the board. I don't think there's a specific standard except by service, maybe, if you're looking at the military. And I honestly don't know what they are. I retired in 2011. They're always looking at new weapons out there on the market, right?
Yeah. Chip and I have a friend that we went to high school with that he was a Fed and retired now, and he carried his own weapon because he didn't like the issued weapon because it just wasn't powerful enough. And he said, if I have to shoot somebody, I don't want them getting up and shooting back at me, which always made sense to me. I mean, that's logical, isn't it?
That is the idea. You shoot at them until they stop doing what you don't want them to do back at you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so we've got our three heroes. They meet at the Naval Academy, and one washes out, goes to work for the CIA. One becomes a Navy SEAL, one's a Marine Corps. We've got a Navy SEAL and somebody in the Marine Corps. Did they just keep in touch with each other because they're friends, or how are they reunited in all of this?
So we actually went through a pretty extensive beta reading process, and actually one of the feedbacks we got, this was like over the Christmas holidays and into January, one of the feedbacks we got is that relationship between Brendan and Liz really needed a lot of work. So we got some heavy-duty relationship advice from the females in our lives about how we could make this work better.
There was probably some subtext there, by the way. But
yeah. We actually rewrote about 25% of the book because of that. So when we started, uh-huh. Liz was not a point of view character. She was not really a main character. And by the time we finished with the book, she was a major character, and actually probably the character we most often get comments about mm-hmm. as people liking her the most of all three.
Excellent. That's wonderful. This book has been compared with the writings of Tom Clancy and his suspense novels. I would think that would be a high compliment for you guys.
Oh, wow. Yes. I think a large portion of the reason why I went into submarines was Hunt for Red October.
what a great book.
It came out when I was a plebe, and I actually met Tom Clancy before he became a superstar.
Really?
What? He was still selling insurance, actually, when I met him, and he gave a talk at the Naval Academy. This is just after Hunt for Red October came out and just before it had gone viral. And that summer, I spent 6 weeks on a Los Angeles-class submarine, and I read Hunt for Red October while I was on cruise, and I was done. That was all I ever wanted to do.
You never wanted to go off the submarine. They had to toss you off. Not true?
Well, I did go ashore occasionally. Probably not enough for my wife, but occasionally.
Is it true you started talking like Sean Connery?
Well, so the movie actually came out when I was in sub school. So they rented the local theater and bussed us all down to the theater and packed us all in there. So the book came out when I was a plebe. The movie came out when I was in submarine school up in Groton.
Now, I've got a question for you. Then we're going to get technical here. Is it possible for one sub to hover over another sub and connect the hatches and go in between the two?
Between the two? Without one of the rescue vehicles? I don't think so. Although, since the mid-90s. So what they've done since then, I have no idea.
Well, let's see. I'm trying to remember. They didn't go from sub to sub. Did they have divers that knocked on the hatch?
Mini submersible.
And then there you go. That's how they did that. Okay. All right. Would have been far more excited if they would have had one sub upside down so the two hatches could.
Yeah, I don't think it works like airplanes, Al.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure airplanes can do that either. All right, guys, we're going to take a break. The book is Weapons of Mass Deception. David Bruns, J.R. Olson, John Olson, our guests. And I got to tell you, you're going to love this book. This is 830-WCCO. Radio.com. 11:37 on CCO. Al Malmberg with David Bruns, John Olson. The book is Weapons of Mass Deception. David, was this song ever piped through the intercom system on the subs you were on?
We never piped music, except maybe during field day once in a while. We were two-thirds of the ship is either on watch or studying, and the other third is asleep. So we tried to kind of keep it quiet.
You mean you can't sleep while you're listening to music? What kind of submarine is that? Now, we had David, a listener who called, who was visually impaired, and he wanted to know if this is available on audiobooks.
So we actually don't have it out on audiobook yet. It should be out later in the year. Earlier this year, before the book came out, we actually ran a Kickstarter campaign to fund a collector's edition hardback version. So we're just in the final processes of producing that now and getting that out to our Kickstarter supporters. And once that's done, then we'll turn our attention to getting an audiobook done, which is a whole other process for producing a book.
Okay, where we left off,
yes.
I was asking, how did the three of these Academy classmates get back together? How does that happen?
So that's it's interesting because, like we discussed earlier in the show, Don washed out of the Academy and eventually got picked up by the CIA. And it's Brendan and Don run into each other randomly at a classified operations brief in Baghdad.
Mm-hmm.
And so they rekindle their friendship. And then a little bit later on, Brendan and Liz run into each other. And Don and Liz also run into each other back in D.C. And so they start rekindling that friendship and exchanging information. And the plot of the book sort of drives the story to bring the three of them together in pursuit of these bad guys.
Within the intelligence community, after the first Gulf War and the second Iraq War ended, was the intelligence community abuzz about, okay, so we know they had these weapons because they used them, so we know they had them. The UN inspectors could never find them. What happened to these weapons? And I would think that our intelligence communities were all a Twitter about this, talking about this, probably still to this day.
Yeah, you know, it's a really interesting topic because when we were ramping up in 2003 to invade Iraq, not just to oust Saddam, but also to really get to the heart of this issue of weapons of mass destruction.
Mm-hmm.
There were captured Iraqi generals who, in their interrogations, could not understand why Saddam hadn't used the weapons of mass destruction on the U.S.
Yeah.
forces.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The way I would phrase it is that Saddam Hussein's campaign of deception was so good he even faked out his own top generals.
There are people that say, and I've had callers that have said this so many times. They never had them. And to which I always respond, well, then how do you explain all the Kurds in northern Iraq that were murdered by the Saddam regime?
They clearly had chemical weapons. And
yes.
That was, I think, something that they worked to eradicate most of them. They also were researching nuclear weapons, or at least nuclear power, and that's why the Israelis mm-hmm. Struck the Osirak facility, and I think it was 83, maybe it's 93. I can't remember the exact date right now.
Yeah, I don't know either. There is the cover of your book. Who did the design of the cover? Because it's frightening.
Yeah, so there's a cover designer I use in California. His name is Steven Novak. Really mm-hmm. does excellent work. Works very fast. And since we're footing the bill for the production of the book, he also mm-hmm. fits our pocketbook as well.
It's nice when you can find somebody who's not only hyper talented, but is willing to work for a very reasonable rate.
I'll try and describe this. I'm not certain what city it is, but it looks like there is a nuclear detonation in the city, and you're seeing it from a distance. And the idea of something like this happening, you know, 4th of July weekend. I remember who was it? Somebody from the NSA was on one of the networks, and I was you know, they had upped the level, asking all of us to be vigilant and keeping our eyes open. And I thought, what is going on here with this? Mm. And so I'm watching this, and I think it was the NSA director who came on and said, well, you know, we've gotten rumblings, and he brought up the word a nuclear device. Mm. And I went, what? Mm. You know, and that ties in with your book, because apparently the weapon of mass destruction, is it a nuclear device?
Yes, it is, and it does end up on U.S. soil. It was so interesting to watch the news cycle happen, because the book actually goes to the fall of 2016, just before the 2016 presidential election. And mm-hmm. So most of the book is done with a historical background, and then we sort of had to project. So things happening like the Israeli election for prime minister, the Iran nuclear talks, the 4th of July thing you just mentioned with mentions of a nuclear device. All these kinds of things started to happen, and it was really frightening and satisfying at the same time, if you can hold those two.
I understand that. Yeah.
Hold those two
that makes sense.
Concepts in your mind.
Guys, let me ask you both a question. In your mind, is it feasible at all that Saddam Hussein and his regime had developed some sort of nuclear device? Is it even feasible? Is it possible?
I would say it was possible. And maybe he did. And maybe one of the airstrikes we carried out took out the facility that was housing it. Maybe, like we talked about at the start of the show, the desert is a very big place. Maybe he and some of his top guys hit them in a deep underground facility. I mean, you could take one of those 50-some foot storage containers and bury it under 80 feet of sand, and nobody's ever going to find that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, or maybe it ended up in Iran.
Or maybe it ended in Iran. That's right.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. All right, we're going to continue our conversation. David Bruns, J.R. Olson, John Olson. The book is Weapons of Mass Deception, and this is a good read. You're going to enjoy it. It's 11:45 on CCO. It's 11:50 on CCO. David Bruns, John Olson, our guests. They have collaborated to write the book Weapons of Mass Deception, and it's available everywhere. And guys, I one thing that I loved about going through the book, and I haven't read it cover to cover yet. One thing that I really enjoyed is that if you're from Minnesota, you're going to connect with the book because you go into great detail about Minnesotans, don't you know?
Yes, we
and
do.
Very descriptive. Yeah. What other locations in the book can you tell us about?
So obviously, Iraq and Iran, those are two key locations. We actually stretched the book up into Finland, interestingly enough. Some really important events take place in the book up in Helsinki. We also stretch into South America, and specifically in Argentina. I don't know if you've ever heard of the tri-border region, but that happens to be a Hezbollah hotbed. Mostly raising funds to send back home to Lebanon to support Hezbollah activities. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, a quick side note on that, just this past Saturday we released a short story, companion piece to Weapons of Mass Deception. I don't know if you remember back in January, there was a special prosecutor down in Buenos Aires in Argentina who was found dead just essentially a day before he was supposed to lay out his case against the president of Argentina. Corruption and linkages between her and Iran, some interesting stuff. And one of our antagonist characters happened to be in Argentina during that time frame. So we were editing the book when that event happened. It was like a perfect opportunity to say, hey, maybe he was involved.
Incredible. The way you've tied it all in. David.
Yeah,
you looked like you were going to say something.
Yeah, so the tying in the we were neck deep in edits for Weapons of Mass Deception when this story about Alberto Nisman broke. And JR was taking notes like a madman, and 60 Minutes had their special on, and it was covered in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times. And again, you know, JR being my plot guy comes back and says, hey, I got this story. And probably the most satisfying review that we've had on it so far was, I mean, it says death of a pawn, so you already know the ending. The guy dies, but we have a big twist at the end that everybody who's read it really, really enjoys.
Yeah, that's what I keep reading. There's a real surprise that's going to stun you. Now, I have a question for you. We've seen numerous attacks around the world by various terrorist organizations. You know, Three Guys in Beirut is what we used to call, you know, the terrorist organizations. It seems like that's where, you know, you had three guys sitting around having beer and smoking some whatever, and they start a terrorist faction. But if we were ever hit, the United States hit by, it, you know, the basis of your story, we were hit by a nuclear weapon. Would it cause World War III? And I've asked myself, and who would we go after?
And,
I mean,
and
how do you
right
declare
there,
war?
Right, and that's the crux of the question, right? If it's one of these non-state groups, right, not supported by an actual nation state, what do you do about it? I mean,
exactly.
The hope would be, obviously, that every nation in the world would say, there is no sanctuary for any of you individuals who are part of that group, and in fact, we're going to assist the United States and the rest of the international community in hunting you down. Because at that level of destruction, that willingness to commit that level of violence, I think you lose all sanctuaries if you're one of those members of a group.
You know, it was pretty impressive how George H.W. Bush, the Gulf War, put the alliance together.
Yeah,
a lot of Arab nations side by side with you know Western troops, which was really a unique scenario at that time. Is it possible that there would be nations that would actually say there will be no sanctuary in our country? I mean, you've got literally what we call rogue nations that I don't know if they would be on board for that. No matter what happened, they would probably, you know, it's like when the Twin Towers went down. We saw the dancing in the streets of, some cities in the Middle East. I mean, they were thrilled that the U.S. had been hit.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
but I also think that when you're talking about a nuclear weapon, that's a fundamentally different kind of situation. And I'll tell you what, as a career intelligence officer, chemical weapons, I'm not too concerned about it. I mean, quite frankly, they're dangerous. They can cause a lot of casualties, but they're limited to a fairly small area because dispersal is, you know, that's the trick, right? A nuclear weapon is pretty scary, but again, I mean, unless it's a really big device. You're going to have a limited number of casualties, relatively speaking. Could it disrupt key infrastructure? Sure. But to me, the scariest scenario has always been a weaponized biological agent because that will spread all over.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. David, quickly, tell us where we can get the book again.
So you can get the book at Amazon in either ebook or print. You can get it in Barnes & Noble in ebook. And all the details are also on our website, which is my name, davidbruns.com.
Thank you very much, davidbruns.com. Very good. Guys, thank you. Pleasure meeting you both. And it's great. I can't wait to finish the book now, crying out loud.
Thank you for having
us. No sleep tonight. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Al, it's been a real pleasure.
Next 2 hours. Thank you. This is 830 WCCO.